Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With UFO sightings, miraculous water that heals the sick, and a mysterious island that appears to pop in and out of existence, the Mexican state of Querétaro contains all the magic of Mexico within its borders. Forgotten stories of UFOs. Flying saucers, cylindrical objects, orbs, and UAPs. These are some of these terms you describe the unexplicable, mysterious flying crafts that have been spotted in Mexican skies for most of the 20th century up until the present day. With the advent of the camera phone and with the technology readily accessible to Mexicans today, YouTube and other parts of the internet are flooded with countless videos of UFOs over Mexico. Before the built-in camera phone and even the older and rarer camcorder, people had a difficult time recording anomalies in the sky. In the 1970s, for example, a person seeing a UFO would have been considered very lucky to have had a camera in hand at the ready to document a sighting. As a consequence of there being little photographic evidence in existence from that time, all that has been passed down through decades from the 70s are stories based on eyewitness testimonies and some of that poorly researched or explained. An interesting wealth of information on the UFO phenomenon exists from that decade in Mexico that few people know about. Here are two stories on Mexican UFO encounters from the 1970s. The first sighting took place on the outskirts of the city of Toluca, located in the Mexican state of Mexico proper. Four friends, young men in their late teens and early 20s, went for a leisurely walk through the streets in the early evening. The date was Sunday, March 25th, 1978. At around 6 o'clock, they found themselves engulfed in a massive cloud of dust. This phenomenon was not localized. It was a large dust storm that descended upon the city with a vengeance, much like the Habubs of the Middle East and North Africa. The four friends wanted a better view of the storm, so they hopped in the car, a typical Mexican-made VW bug, and drove to an overlook in the area. From this overlook, the group had a great view of the show of dust descending upon the city of Guadalajara. As they sat outside and watched, the clouds seemed more black than sandy brown, which indicated that it carried rain with it. It was not merely a dust storm. As the skies got worse, the four friends retreated to the safety of a Volkswagen. Large drops pelted the windshield, lightning crashed out of the sky, and the wind blew with great ferocity. Dust and other large pieces of debris swirled around the tiny car. The four decided to hunker down and wait out the storm at Toluca. At least the radio in the car worked, and they could listen to music despite the chaos around them. One of the friends suddenly noticed a bright red light in the rearview mirror of the car. They immediately thought it was the lights came from a police car, but couldn't believe that the police cruiser would be out at the remote overlook at that time of night and during a bad storm. A four noticed that the red object began rising, and at that same time, the light started to move. The radio in the car went dead, light hovered over the hills, and their friends sat transfixed in their car, just watching the light. The only witness in this event would go on the record, and researchers was also the oldest of the four friends at age 22. His name was Jose Brito. Right from the get-go, Brito told investigators that it was very difficult to get a really clear view of the objects emanating the red light because of the storm. Object also was also emitting a type of smoke that swirled around it and made it even harder to see. Nonetheless, Brito went on to describe what he and his friends saw the best he could. He said the object was about the size of a bus, with a red chrome spear on top. The spear had a ring of small portals. A bluish light shone from these portals, while they appeared to be some sort of windows. They could not see any occupants of the craft peering through them. Brito also noticed what seemed to be landing gear, or legs, sticking out of the bottom of the craft. Although the object was not near the ground, along with these legs on the bottom of the craft, there is some sort of engine that spewed jets of fire and made a thunderous noise. From his testimony to researchers, Brito stated, "It spun so quickly that we lost sight of the details. We couldn't see it. We couldn't see if it had retreated its legs or closed its portals. All we could see was a source of light suspended in the air." When the object took off, the storm intensified, even sending sizable rocks flying in the direction of the little Volkswagen. The four friends sat in the car, terrified, hoping they would not be hit with a larger pieces of debris. When the object disappeared, the storm died down, and the raging winds were replaced by gentle rain. When the rain ceased, the young man got out of the car and walked over the area behind the car where they originally saw the object. As they walked closer to the site, they noticed the ground getting warmer, and they also noticed burn marks in the lower brush and shrubs. Did anyone else see the strange object over Toluca? There were a few other witnesses in the city who described the craft as a bright and colorful spinning top, but there were no photographs. Although moderately investigated, no one knows what the craft was or how it related to the terrible dust storm that night in March of 1978. Wow. So, first off, so it's like a dome, like a bus, the top one that spins. So obviously giving off like some kind of like radiation. Because this heat of the air around it. Or it could be like from the engine. Yeah. We have another sighting come up. Alright, the second story hails from the Mexican state of Querétaro in the small town of San Joaquin. An article written in Diario de Querétaro, May 7th, 1975, told of how four objects were spotted over town sometime between 9 and 10 p.m. on May 6th. Among the witnesses was Ricardo Ledesma, a local tax collector and district attorney, who was quoted in an article. He said he saw four strange objects which flew at an altitude higher than that of private planes. His wife had called him to the window to see those identifiable craft. She had seen the objects for longer than her husband and told reporters. I had a chance to see the objects twice, since they flew around the community a few times. They flew in from the east and returned in the same direction. She also said that they looked like the small saucers used in old scales or balances attached to chains used to weigh things. Another witness, town councilor member Manuel Martinez, said basically the same thing. The objects looked like small pans. He also added that they made a slight buzzing sound, probably from their engines. Another witness, a woman named Guadalupe Salvador, told reporters this. At first I saw what lights that appeared to be stars, but as they drew closer and flew overhead, I saw there were circular objects like weighing platforms with dangling wires, gray in color. The next month, June of 1975, strange anomalies in the sky returned to the small town of San Joaquin. Witnesses reported seeing a massive object flying low and slowly over town hall, almost clipping a radio tower. This object was similar to one seen the previous month, with its disc-shaped appearance, like the saucers of old-fashioned scale. This large object had lights coming off the top of it that converged to a point, which made the craft look even more like a balance of a scale, suspended by chains. This bizarre craft had hundreds of witnesses view the phenomenon. Whoa. The sighting caught the attention of the famous paranormal researcher Salvador Fructedo Tamberis, a Spanish-born former Jesuit who was expelled from the order in 1959 and devoted the rest of his life to exploring paranormal phenomenon. Fructedo wrote over 30 books, most of them covering the complex subject of UFOs and how they relate to religion and human history. While in Mexico, he founded an organization called the Mexican Institute of Paranormal Studies. Fructedo mentioned the 1975 San Joaquin Catero UFO sightings in his 1984 book, Teofamanos de los Dios, which translates to, in English, as defending themselves from or beware of the gods. He focused on why eyewitness accounts of the incidents. Here is the expert from his book. One day in 1975, a young man from a humble background told me how 2 months before, at night, he had witnessed a UFO flying very slowly and at a low altitude over his house, located on the outskirts of town. Excited by what he had to see, he ran after the UFO, following its trajectory into a deep gully outside the city, not far from his home. When he reached the gully's edge, he saw a large lens-shaped object on the ground, emitting a fantastic white light. Frightened by the sight, he crouched amid some shrubs from his hiding place. He was able to see several midgets with objects resembling flashlights in their hands. And these flashlights emitted thin, concentrated beams of light, and the midgets were having a good time hacking down plants with them, intentionally cutting one down after another. After a while, my friend, who had remained concealed and motionless behind a shrub, saw the objects change color and moments later began to extend very slowly, balancing itself repeatedly some 5 meters over the ground until it shot off heavenward. While engaging in this back and forth motion, the object struck a large cactus and toppled it. Months later, it was occupied. The old man to the site, I asked him to show me where the cactus had been felled. We held in that direction, and sure enough, there lay a large half on this side of the cactus. Despite the time that they had gone by, we were able to see without any difficulty the large rounded imprints of more than one landing on the gully floor. Later on, back at his home, the young man gave me fused rocks that he had collected from the landing marks while they were still hot. He had placed them in a jar, and after a while, inside of the jar had been covered in yellowish dust that resembled sulfur. All these details are more or less common to many other UFO landings. But what was new to me here was a half-disintegrated coyote I discovered not far from one of the landing sites. What attracted my curiosity was certain strange characteristics that could not be made out on the animal carcass. Strange of all was the fact that the entire body had been run, like a rag is run to extract water from it. Yet, in spite of this, its bones remained unbroken. Furthermore, it was also interesting to see that no ants or any insects whatsoever could be found beneath or around the carcass. While there was a good amount of animal flesh still stuck to the bones, it had dried up to up in an unusual manner without rotting and disintegrating as a common case for animals that have died in the field. End of quote. Well, that's very strange. If it's this desert, maybe it's like the sun is dried up real fast. A possible explanation. Maybe. I don't know. I get all again. I knew like how hot the hot there in the area is. How hot and hot and dry is it? Maybe this could be dried up. Possibly. Okay. It's strange that no like incident came around it though. It's very strange. An often overlooked decade, 1970s. Has many UFO cases that are due for a second look by researchers today. Old newspapers and other archival sources may provide a fertile territory for modern-day investigators to explore and learn from. Until we can access their findings, we must wait and wonder the final witness in the night skies. Well, it's pretty cool. What's up next? We got some miraculous healing waters of Tecote up next. In May of 1991, on a ranch outside town of Tecote in the Mexican state of Querétaro, a sick dog took a drink from a small puddle near a well. Ranch owner Jesus Khan Lemon did not expect the dog to live much longer, but within days of drinking the water, the dog had such vibrancy and energy as it had had in its youth. The rancher, not believing what he himself had witnessed, decided to experiment with the well water. He had people with a list coming to the ranch and drink the water. Hold on a second. Fucking nine over here. Okay. You have people that was come to the ranch and drink the water, and those people reported almost a miraculous healing result. Word got out, and within months, there were lines to see the water with people coming from all over the world looking for cures for everything from migraine headaches to diabetes, from high cholesterol to even cancer and AIDS. Senor Cahan had inherited the property from his parents and lived a comfortable life on the ranch. Because of this, he felt no need to charge people for the water. Although he did seek to limit the amount visitors could take away, more for time and traffic concerns than anything. With help from the town, Cahan developed systems to handle the thousands of people who would come to this property per day seeking a miracle. A triage system developed with those mysterious conditions shuffled to a shorter and faster line. It was reported that money came from the national and state governments to pay for the huge still water containers to house the well water. After a local priest sent a Tecote water to Army Hospital and cured 600 people. As with shrines in Mexico, small enterprises in the town popped up to serve the multitudes of people. Townsfolk sold food, plastic jugs, mementos, and so on.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Porters earned the equivalent of a few cents for hauling water for people too infirm to wait in line or too deliberate to carry the water back to their cars themselves. Keon never made one centavo or cent on this whole phenomenon. While the well attracted many people who ascribed religious or spiritual properties to water, and many members of the clergy, from nuns and priests, and even a Catholic bishop, praised the water for its divine aspects. Keenan never claimed that there was anything supernatural upon the cures, and relief supposedly attributed to what was coming a well on his property. He was quoted as saying in the Washington Post article from January 1992, "The water weighs less than H2O. This is a mysterious theory for science why it weighs less. After testing it, local health officials declared water safe to drink, and say that confirmed to health and safety standards to comparable to well water. Throughout the state of Carantero, they could find no other special properties to the water, despite the rancher's claims that it is somehow lighter than average. Thomas University of Carantero performed a series of scientific tests on the water and found nothing unusual about it. No strange chemical properties, nothing special at all. No amount of scientific tests would seem to stop the deluge of people from inundating the small town of Tecolote, whatever." A UK nurse named Gil Fry, employed by the organization Share International, visited Tecolote in July of 1992 during the height of the water pilgrimages and kept a diary of her experiences. A December issue of the Share International Journal published Nurse Fry's account. Here is what she had to report in her own words. "As a professional nurse, I was fascinated by reports of Tecolote water having healed so many ailments, including diabetes, epilepsy, arthritis, cancer, and even AIDS. Having worked with patients for 10 years, and have suffered the pain and anguish of such disease, the idea of finding a cure or partial cure was indescribably exciting. It was thus that I set out in July this year on a quest to Mexico to collect the miracle water from Tecolote. From what I had read, I was expecting some hardship, at the very least to wait in line for 3 or 4 days at nights and near tropical temperatures, and took me with a comprehensive survival kit, mosquito net, sunscreen, bedding, etc., and arrived prepared for an eventuality. I had also read that each person's water ration was generally 3 liters. I brought along several plastic containers in the event my expectations could not have been more wrong. A wonderfully kind colleague of Benjamin Creme in Mexico City took charge of me, drove me to Tecolote, and speaking the local language, which I do not, overcame each barrier and problem. Every door seemed wide open. My 3-day stint turned into a mere 3-hour wait. My water ration increased from 3 to 38 liters. And more wonderful still, I witnessed the most extraordinary photograph possibly in existence, which confirmed everything I had believed for the last 6 years. Since May 1991, 3 million people have been to Tecolote, and at least 6 million people have drank the water. The ranch owner, Mr. Gahan, keeps the registration files of every visitor, some of whom had traveled from far as Europe and Russia. Many Mexican government officials, politicians, and artists have been seen waiting in this queue, which varies in sizes from 5,000 to 10,000 daily. Perhaps a bit wary from the crowds, Cajin closed his ranch to the public for 2 weeks during Easter of 1993. After he reopened his ranch, Cajin saw a marked decrease in crowds. Within years, the people seeing a cure from reckless water dwindled to a small trickle. In January 2015, the Mexican newspaper El Universal went to Tecolote to see the current state of the town and to investigate what happened to Jesus Cajin and his special well. What they found was shocking. Cajin had passed away in 2004 and ironically from an aggressive form of cancer. His widow sold the property, and in other words, the Castillo family had no plans to open the property to public ever again. The town of Tecolote, according to the newspaper, seemed like a ghost town, with many abandoned buildings and other dilapidated structures. After the boom ended in the mid-1990s, the town economy ruined. Many people left Tecolote to find work in the capital city of Querétaro or in other larger Mexican cities. An irony of ironies, during the El Universal investigation into the town in early 2015, they found that Tecolote had been without municipal water services for several months. The main water source having been all exhausted, with only a scant few deeper private wells giving water. A town that had been known internationally for its water was effectively all dried up. And one of the magic and miracles supposedly experienced at this place in the early 1990s, thousands of people claimed cures of terminal illness. Many more claimed the water helped them with minor conditions, even though there was no scientific basis for any of these claims. Do we have on our hands genuine examples of true power of belief in the mind's important role in the healing process? Or do those making the pilgrimage to Tecolote experience true miracles? I would say it's probably like, what's it called? Okay. Placebo effect, you know? Maybe it's real. I don't know what. I can claim anything. But what, we have a story of a disappearing island here coming up. It's Isla Pima, Mexico's disappearing island coming up. Alright, on the Mexican-Querétaro Highway on August 4th, 1998, a semi-truck slammed into the side of a car carrying two passengers. One, the driver, was unharmed. The other person in the car was killed instantly. The passenger was a 74-year-old Jose Cacheo Davila, a Mexican senator, former head of the Mexican political party known as the PAN. While holding many offices and posts in this long and distinguished political career, Senator Conchillo was perhaps best known for what otherwise would have been amounted to a footnote to history. He was a tireless defender of the existence of Isla Pima, a small island about 100 kilometers off the coast of the Yucatan, which had appeared on maps off and on across the centuries and in recent times had not been confirmed as real. Conchillo reasoned that the island was proven, that if the rise was proven real, it would extend Mexican's maritime territorial claims and much farther into the Gulf of Mexico and secure Mexico's rights to billions of barrels of petroleum and untold mineral resources. With an expanded exclusive economic zone, or EEZ, of Mexico, Senator Conchillo advocated discovering the island, building a lighthouse or some other improvements there, establishing a permanent Mexican presence on Brahima, all while Mexico was negotiating with the United States on how the two countries would divvy up the Gulf of Mexico's resources. In September of 1997, the Secretary of Navy of the Mexican government sent an oceanographic vessel to try to locate the island. covering over 300 square nautical miles in the general area of where Isla Bermuda had appeared on various maps, they found nothing. Senator Cochello accused the United States, especially the CIA, of deliberately destroying the island as to nullify any larger claims Mexico would have in the Gulf. A month before, Senator's voice was permanently silenced in the fatal car crash in 1998, the U.S. and Mexico signed the Clinton-Dale Treaty, which was heavily influenced by big American oil companies. The partitioning of the Gulf of Mexico into economic zones was complete. The Clinton-Dale Treaty ignored its possible existence of Isla Bermuda and thus awarded the United States a lion's share of the resources of the region. Is the island called Isla Bermuda a real place? Was it once real and now gone? Was it something misdescribed, or was it reported to be in the wrong place? The search for truth begins in Florence, Italy, as Octavio Del Stato in these archives, this is a map dating back to 1335, drawn by Caspar Viegas, a Portuguese cartographer. On a map, there is clear indication that an island exists in the Gulf of Mexico called Bermuda, which in older Iberian dialects means reddish in color. On this map and others, this island was supposedly located at 22 degrees 33 minutes north latitude and 31 degrees 22 minutes west latitude. Bermuda next appears in 1544, map by Sebastian Cabot, the Italian explorer who sailed for England and charted many areas of North America. The map was printed in Antwerp and clearly shows Bermuda along with a small group of islands to the east of it called Negrillos. Over the centuries, like Isla Bermuda, the series of about six small coral islets and rocks known as Negrillos will appear and disappear. To this day, the existence of the small chain of islands is in dispute. Cabot's map was especially useful for his English overlords who carried piracy in the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. As a consequence, Isla Bermuda was also known as a hiding place for English and Dutch buccaneers who would attack Spanish treasure ships and disrupt commerce in the area. At this time, it has been described as a lightly wooded island measuring only roughly 80 square kilometers of abundant bird life. The island first appears in 1772 in a comprehensive map of New Spain by Alcete and Ramirez. Neither Bermuda nor the tiny islands of Negrillos are present. A few years after the publication of this map, official cartographers of the Spanish crown, Miguel de Aldrete and Andreas Balaroma, sought to prove the existence of islands rumored to be north of the Yucatan and hundreds of miles into the Gulf. From Aldrete's diary of July of 1775, he writes, "We sailed for Havana, trying to locate Bermuda and other islands. When you arrived at the location of the Bermuda, even though the visibility was clear and the sea calm, we didn't discover anything, not a spot, not a mark, nor existence, nor variance in color, nothing. And nothing in earliest 20th centuries of the Bermuda was really shown on maps that were officially or edited by or under the supervision of the Mexican government. But no maritime verification was known to have been carried out in the region during this time. The existence of the island is registered in 1864 Ethnographic Charter of Mexico, governmental edition, and also in a book from time called Isla Mexicanas, officially published by the Secretary of Public Education. On page 110, the book places the island at 22 degrees 33 minutes north latitude and 91 degrees 22 minutes west. By 1920s, Isla Bermuda had been discovered and disappeared from most maps. Officials from Mexico's Ministry of Foreign Affairs even declared before the Mexican Congress that the island has sunk and no longer existed. a Mexican senator at the time, Luis Coppola Hoffrey, made statements to the media about the Foreign Affairs Minister's presentation to the Congress. He said, Although since the 16th century, the state of Yucatan was included as part of national and international maps since 1920, Isla Bermejal is no longer taken into account as Mexican national territory and not present physically. Its information is not found or hidden by different authorities and governmental entities. The last government printed school book showing Isla Bermejal was released in 1946. After that, interest in the island disappeared, it seems, along with the island. It was only during the Clinton administration in the United States during the 1990s when Mexican national attention focused once again on Isla Bermejal and on the inconsistency of Senator Cochillo with the Clinton-Cedillo treaty in force for over a decade, with American oil companies already well established with gigantic platforms in the Gulf. On agreed to territory interests in Isla Bermejal resurfaced, much like an island rising out of the sea. In 2009, there were 3 formal expeditions to find the island. In addition to the sea expeditions, there were attempts to locate the island by air and satellite. One notable attempt to locate the island by air was made by the Mexican television network Televisa, which created a show about Isla Bermejal that considered the island to be a mystery along the lines of the Bermuda Triangle. Indeed, others have noted the existence of ley lines crossing the path of the island, or mysterious vortexes nearby that may cause the island to pop in and out of existence. Yep, bro. Go another fucking dimension or something? It's crazy. Probably just like a part of the sunk or something. As the island once existed and is indeed now gone, there are many theories to explain its disappearance, from rising sea levels due to global warming, yeah, that's probably it, to destruction by hurricanes or other natural forces, yeah, that's possible right there, to Senator Cochillo's theories about CIA obliteration of a tiny piece of very valuable Mexican territory. The story of Isla Bermejal is not over. On April 4th, 2012, a man named Marco Antonio Salvo Veloso uploaded a 5.5-minute video to YouTube about a fishing trip that he and his friends took to Isla Bermejal. The island has reddish tones, ample birds, and scrubby trees that were described in the 16th century in part accounts. There were no compass coordinates occupying the video, so there's no way to tell exactly where Salvo Veloso actually was, but it seemed like it wasn't his first trip to the island. Whether real or imagined, sunk or destroyed, caught between vortexes or blinking out of space and time, Isla Bermejal remains a little known but intriguing Mexican mystery. That's great. Oh, if I can find that video real quick. So how you guys doing? Sorry, I've been. I don't know. I can't find it. Okay. I don't know. Whatever. All right. See you next time. Is this the button for the end of the show? This one. Yes, that one. Again, one, thank you for listening. I've been Tanner. You've been listening to Coach Cryptid. Check me out on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Alright. It's your friends for the show.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.